when we're talking about content or about saturation on the campaign, I think it's the cold in here that's keeping me from completing a sentence properly.
So saturation.
Oh my God. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Outpost Podcast. It's going to be a great day, a great evening, wherever you are. There are four of us back in the barn today.
Yay. It's a beautiful day, too.
I am Lacey, and who else we have with us today?
We got D-Lock.
I'm Tom.
And I'm Mark.
Okay, so there's a lot of stuff to talk about today. We're really excited, obviously, because we just love being next to each other, shoved in this barn. We already turned off the heater, so we're freezing. Everybody's got blankets.
We're not that excited because Derek will not share this blanket with me. This blanket's from my childhood, Derek.
Is it really?
It's a beautiful blanket. It's held up well.
I think it's Pendleton.
It's held up very well.
It actually feels like Pendleton. That's some quality blanket right there.
Mm-hmm.
So today,
blanket forts.
Oh God!
So now they derailed the podcast.
Okay, so let's talk about what's going on right now at Orange Nebula. So we're in the middle of a Kickstarter campaign.
Yeah, we are.
Your excitement.
Let me check it. Yep, it's still there.
Oh, it is. It's live. Yeah, it's there. So this is a really interesting time for us, right, Mark? What's a day like right now in the middle of our Kickstarter campaign?
Well, I don't know where the days begin and end. That's the problem. It's just constant waking hours, trying to be really attentive to a tremendous amount of comments and social and it's just almost entirely positivity and people mm-hmm. are excited and stuff like that. There's a lot of questions that we're trying to get to and be responsive for people, but it's really just kind of a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, Tom's working on, beautifully writing and kind of weaving these journeys together on the site.
What's that
face? and they just look amazing and they read well. And there's just really, we hope that people are really enjoying those. And so mm-hmm. there's a lot of effort going in on all those different fronts. And then, occasionally we eat.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, more often than most humans.
Thank you, Lacey.
Is that good grammar? True. I more often than most.
It's okay. I'm down for that.
I think that's correct.
All right.
More often than most.
Yes.
Yeah, see, it just sounds very studious.
Okay.
You didn't have a long enough pause in there, though, to really deliver it with power.
Mm. I more often than most.
Yeah, there it is.
Is that better?
That was good delivery.
Such a fast learner.
Thank you. I can apply well. Tom,
yes.
Kind of elaborate a little bit on what the day is like right now as we're going through this campaign.
I mean, the days are a giant sprint. It's just a big endless rush of joy and energy and excitement and exhaustion. One thing you don't realize until you're on this side of these campaigns is just how much correspondence is actually happening that you don't see.
Mm-hmm.
My perspective was always of the comment section, which is by far and away the smallest portion of the correspondence. I mean, within this is a fairly quiet campaign. It's a second printing of a game that people are familiar with. The comments, while our community is super engaged and awesome, the comments are fairly quiet. There's mm-hmm. not a lot of controversy. But within, and no hyperbole, within 2 or 3 hours of the campaign launching, I had 600 emails.
Oh, wow.
It just, we're getting mm-hmm. hit on every social channel nonstop. And that's awesome, and we're really excited to engage with all that. But the sheer load of nonstop things to respond to.
And not to make it sound like we didn't plan either, because we have a lot of planning that went into this. There's there's an FAQ that we kind of organically started to put up with some of the most common questions and stuff like that. But there's Facebook and Twitter and messages and Instagram and emails and a lot of different platforms.
I got a pigeon letter the other day.
Nice.
Came right to my front door. A pigeon dropped it right off.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's a lie. I can't maintain my integrity.
That was hard to arrange. That was just Mark in the street throwing this pigeon at you.
Well, it came from Singapore originally, so it took a while to get there. But
yeah, I mean, there's a ton of correspondence, and that's awesome. Mm-hmm. And then other than that, we've kind of thrown ourselves off this cliff with the journeys. Mm-hmm. So every daily update takes a lot more energy and time than they normally would, because we have to go through and figure out curate all of everyone's responses and mm-hmm. boil those down into things that they can vote on. And let's wrap that into a story. And how do we keep that interesting? We're getting the updates out a little later at night than I think we would like, but that's mm-hmm. just kind of the nature of the beast. You know, we get through the day, and then Mark and I have several hours in the evening where we collaborate on those, and then
we
get them out and run to bed. Mm-hmm. And then we half sleep all night and jump up in the morning and, try not to look at your phone first thing, but good luck with that.
Or at 2 a.m.
Wake up every 2 hours to look at your phone. And
it's been really, really rewarding too. Like, as much work as this is, like you said, the journeys part is allowing us to kind of respond on the fly to what the community is doing. That was all by design. So, allowing the community to have a voice into what the characterization and the experience of kind of these cards and tiles and these types of things is really fun.
It is fun.
On both, we're getting a lot of comments from the community, but also just on our side, creating a game within the campaign mm-hmm. for the game. And that, I thought that was just, it's been really fun.
I'm super inspired by how those are going. When we post, it's one thing for people to vote in a poll,
mm-hmm.
Because it's such a low barrier of entry. But when you say, hey, leave the site, come over to this other site, Facebook or whatever, and here's a sketch of a guy, what's his name? What does he do? What's his backstory? What does he like to eat? And 100 people comment on it in 24 uh-huh. hours. Like, that level of engagement is unbelievably satisfying. It's very exciting.
Okay, I have a question. Did everybody in this room vote on the polls
yes.
themselves?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did your poll vote win?
No.
No.
So far, actually, most of mine have not.
Mine are losing. Too.
Mine are winning.
I wanted the owl.
But
you wanted the owl.
So bad.
Mm-hmm.
I could always just go back and change it at the end. I'm just kidding.
All mine have won. I just
Mark Tatership.
We're choosing. Yeah. Mark Tatership. Yeah.
Mark has asked me at different times, hey, can we wrap this thing back in there so that we can have it? And I said, no.
Yeah. Yeah. Then it's a Tom Tatership. Oh. Y'all get ready for the Derek Tatership.
What's gonna happen under the Derek Tatership?
I don't know, musicals.
It's gonna be a lot more singing.
A lot more singing.
Actually, by the time people hear this, they will probably already have been required to. One of the upcoming journeys is gonna start out locked, mm-hmm. and then
delocked.
It's gonna be delocked, and then. In order to advance the journey, people are going to have to write short poems.
Songs. Sonnets.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is super cool.
And it's probably going to be four people each writing five. But you know what? That's fantastic. Yeah, I love that. It's just going to be Derek with 12 different accounts.
I will win.
The best one, I will happily perform a routine to if... if people would like that, don't you think?
They would like it.
If people would like that, we will do that.
Shut up, Tom.
That'll be one
you
of the polls.
You never like my songs.
Should Lacey perform this? And people will like
I'll
it.
I'll do it on a live stream, at least.
So you can't
After the recent live stream, people were upset that there was not more song and dance.
See?
So. It's true.
See?
In a Lacey Tatership, there would be.
That's true.
Way more.
Sparkles, songs and dances, and snacks.
Snacks, yes.
Come on.
Of course.
Good.
I'm not going to argue with
sparkly
against
snacks.
Any of that.
Okay, so one thing, when we're in the middle of a campaign like this, one thing that we normally really like to be doing is looking at other campaigns, looking at what's going on in crowdfunding. And we don't get to do that quite as much during this process, but we still want to talk a little bit about the industry overall. What's going on with crowdfunding and what's going on with the game board
with the game
with the game board meta
yeah.
When it came out of my mouth, it just didn't sound quite right.
Not quite right.
so what's going on in the industry right now?
Well, specifically, I think the crowdfunding portion of the board game industry is more saturated than ever, and there's some benefits and some detriments to that. And I try to keep a pretty good pulse of what that's like. I mean, most games crowdfund now, they go through Kickstarter. And it's just kind of become the meta, you know, for how to get a game out there. Even some of the big game companies are now just using that as a platform for pre-sales. And, you know, that's not how the platform was originally set up, but that's what it's become. And that's just the way it is. And there's nothing necessarily inherently good or bad about that. I would say, though, on the good side, a lot more people are finding that it's very accessible for them to create and to bring things into the world.
Which is wonderful.
That's wonderful. The downside is many of those do not have the business acumen or the understanding on how to do that well and execute well. And so what happens is consumers have to do a lot more due diligence to find out what's worth backing. Are these people worthy of trust? Are they going to be able to keep their promises? Is this game good? Mm-hmm. It looks good. I have no idea if it is good, or this game looks terrible and then it becomes an award-winning game, like, because they, you know, they didn't understand all the pieces. And quite honestly, there's such a tremendous learning curve. I think you almost have to fail before you succeed. And so both of those things kind of play into the mix there.
It's neat. I mean, that is good and bad. And it's also just interesting the way that it's involved. It's another level with which Kickstarter and crowdfunding involves the community because it is asking them to play such an involved role. Like, normally you don't have to ask yourself, is this product grossly underdeveloped? Like, is this ready for market? Because normally if something's in market, probably, you know, like, but in Kickstarter, sometimes things look great and are nowhere near ready to be there. And it, I think, I mean, this is a whole other conversation, what I'm about to say, but just,
go right ahead.
It is asking people to be more knowledgeable and educated than they otherwise would be.
People are super smart, right? Consumers are smart. And any creator who thinks that they're going to be able to slap something together and make it look good and not have done their due diligence is going to pay a hefty price for that.
There's an extent to which also that we have to be careful there as consumers with going too far with what we think we know. You know, like if I think about my first relationship with Kickstarter and what was cool about...
I'm sorry, I just like the way you said we all have
a first relationship.
Do you remember everyone remembers their first Kickstarter. But really, though, like, I have very, very, very fond memories of my first couple Kickstarters because what was special to me about that and about the industry is now also, like, what was the best part of the industry there is now also becoming, like, the worst part of the industry. So it was cool that you could have a voice and you had accessibility to creators and you could, like, I have games on my shelf at home that I, when I was nowhere near being in the industry, that I know, like, that piece of that game is in there because of something I said and did on Kickstarter.
Cool. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and so you felt involved, and, you know, I feel ownership in some of these other games that I had nothing to do with other than being involved in a campaign, and it was very cool. The flip side of that is the fact that we're asking everyone to take that level of ownership and that level of knowledge. Everyone gets to the point where now everyone feels like, I am an expert in design, graphic design, development, shipping, manufacturing. Right. You know, everyone thinks that they know all these things. And then you reach this level of expectation from creators where, you know, now I as a consumer think you should be doing this this way. And when the creator pushes back or says, well, you know, no, or doesn't, then I as the consumer feel like, well, I know what I'm talking about. I'm going to burn you to the ground. And, you know, and so it, so we've almost, so what's so cool about this is also the worst thing about this. And it's just this weird balancing act of involvement with, from consumers.
There's so many, there's so much that doesn't show on the surface that I think limits the perspective. And quite honestly, you know, we were in that, in that spot too, until we did it, right? Like to actually bring a crowdfunded, you know, product into the world internationally is exponentially harder than it looks on the surface. Even if you know that, go ahead. It's harder than that, right? And that's okay. I mean, everybody can learn into it, but yeah, making demands as a consumer without really understanding all the details is kind of hard from a creator's perspective. Because you can only say something so many times, and if they just don't believe you, then you just kind of have to like agree to disagree. And being on the other side sheds a lot more light on that.
We talked about a couple of the pros and cons of saturation on the crowdfunding.
Yeah, we did just wander away from that for a second, didn't we? Sorry about that. So, I mean, one of the things we've been seeing with saturation is, you know, people are choosing between having to choose between things more.
You
know, everyone can't get everything that they want, you know, and that used to be possible on Kickstarter. Like, this game looks really cool, I'm going to back it. Now, at any given moment, five games look cool, and not everyone can afford that. Most people can't afford that.
And so the pros, well, the cons to that is there's a lot of competition.
Yeah, there's a lot of competition. There's a lot of dialogue about how it's oversaturated and that this is a problem and it's a bubble and it's going to burst.
But.
Yeah, but the other thing that you see is that that's bringing people in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was trying to remember who I had this conversation with, but some other publisher was recently talking about how if they were looking at their campaign numbers and everything was just kind of like do, you know, trickling along, and then two huge campaigns launched like in the same 48-hour window, his numbers went through the roof. And, you know, common sense would say like, oh, these big campaigns are sucking all the oxygen out of the room. Like, they're taking up everyone's budget. No one has extra money to back my campaign. But those campaigns are so big and their advertising budgets are so big that it's bringing people to the platform.
Kind of ride the coattails. And,
yeah, exactly. And exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's all complicated.
There's some additional good news about a saturated market. And that is...
What's the good news,
because,
Mark?
Tell us the good news.
Because consumers are more discerning than ever, it puts more pressure on the creators to do their job better, to plan better, to make a better product so that they can distance themselves from those who don't. And I think that's good for the industry. I think it's good to have creators be pressured to do amazing, breathtaking work and not skip steps.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason that we take years to produce a game, you know, at least 18 months, if not longer. And, you know, just to have creators just cranking out work, you know, makes me nervous. It makes me think that they're really not putting the development time in. Even if they have a big staff and stuff like that, I think you just have to let things organically grow. And so I think that's a good thing, because in the end, those who don't do their homework should suffer, and those who put the extra work in should be the ones that thrive.
Mm-hmm. My teacher said that.
You will suffer. You will
suffer. You will suffer if you
prepare
do.
To suffer.
That's a really good
there
point.
There will
though.
Be suffering.
I will say, while I completely agree with that, and I look around the industry and I see a lot of companies that do need to challenge themselves to go further with certain elements, particularly development and graphic design and things like that, I would also caution consumers to be a little bit careful on how much you take upon yourself to police and hold companies accountable. Because a lot of the time, and I certainly used to fall into this bucket where, you know, a company would do something or I would receive a product that would be in a certain condition or such and such would happen. And I would feel like, well, I need to hold this company accountable for, you know, I felt like I was doing like this altruistic good thing. Like I'm going to go out there and I'm going to help, you know, spread the word about this practice that I think needs to end so that everyone can be held to a higher standard. What I'm starting to realize now is that a lot of the time, what you're doing is there's a small business out. Now what I see is a small business that
hustling.
What I'm seeing is a small business that is hurt and frustrated by the same thing that you're experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
So like someone that they hired someone that made a decision that's now reflecting on them.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, businesses have a responsibility to hire and subcontract things out intelligently. But at a certain point, like, you can't control what everyone does, you know, and so
i.e. stickers on the box instead of the shrink wrap.
That's a great example, you know? So for people who don't know, one original version of Vindication was supposed to have some stickers printed on the shrink, stuck on the shrink wrap that said it's this version of the game, but the stickers were applied to the box. Mm-hmm. And were a bear to get off, and people were upset. And that's a great example of something where it's like, this publisher and
should know
what is wrong with them. Who made this idiot decision? They should be fired. This is terrible. You know, and everyone's mad and like vocalizing this frustration. And, you know, and I don't want to necessarily make this about us, but just broadly speaking, mm-hmm. like for half the time with these things, you know, the person that the frustration is should be aimed at, you know, isn't even someone that anyone has heard of.
Correct.
You know, so now when I see some of these things happening on social media where it's like, this thing showed up in the board was so flimsy. Mm-hmm. Like, part of me wonders, like, is that publisher heartbroken somewhere that
probably.
The board showed up so flimsy and mm-hmm. they are devastated and embarrassed that this happened, but like, they can't just come out and be like, well, it's the manufacturer's fault and, you know, mm-hmm. just like defend mm-hmm. themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then put them under the light. Like, what a bunch of idiots when they don't understand how many times the manufacturer may have gone to bat, put more in than they went, you know, gone above mm-hmm. and beyond and actually saved the day in other aspects. So there's so many of those factors that don't show on the surface, and it's really easy to cast judgment. I think that's what you're getting
yeah,
at.
Yeah, just that there's a fine line between let's ask more of companies mm-hmm. and let's also maybe give them the benefit of the doubt that sometimes when things go wrong, it's not because they were being careless or it's not because they didn't care. Maybe something just went wrong.
Can
you know,
we just do it nicely? I think it's possible to just do it nicely,
it's
you know,
possible.
Because there's always other human beings on the other side of whatever your complaint is. Mm-hmm. And I like what you're saying. I think it's empathy, you know? Let's be empathetic towards everybody
yes,
in the industry.
Yes, let's do challenge the industry to be better, but let's do it empathetically and let's mm-hmm. do it with the understanding that maybe we don't all know everything all the time about how stuff happened.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Except D-Lock.
He knows all things. I'm just perfect, so yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I don't really gravitate towards the conversation you're having. So
can you go levitate over there again?
So since we are pretty new to this medium, we really are wanting to find out a little bit more about what people want to hear about from us. So we've been kind of asking for questions, you know, what do you guys want us to cover on the podcast? And we actually received one really good topic idea. Tom, tell us a little bit about the idea that people wanted to hear about.
Yeah, and it actually is kind of what we've been doing for the last 20 minutes, but we received a question where someone asked, now Mark and I have been playing games our whole life, mm-hmm. you know, so we're new to publishing them, but we're both longtime gamers. Mm-hmm. And the question was, now that you are on the publishing side of the wall, how has your perspective changed on the industry? You know, what have you learned?
It's terrifying.
Run away.
I want to be on the other side.
No, you don't. That's not
I like this side too, but holy moly.
Well, the other side is easier, but is it more fulfilling?
Easier is one word. Uh-huh. Yeah. It's I don't even know where to begin with that tome of knowledge. When I say knowledge, I mean, you know, learning the hard way, a lot of it.
You can't get a sentence out.
I want to write a book, you know. Jamie Stegmaier already wrote a book and it's amazing, and there needs to be like 14 more volumes
to
of
help
that.
People.
Yeah, and it's just, and honestly, to be real, I mean, that's just true of any industry, mm-hmm. right? Like, you just have to learn as you go, and you evolve and you get stronger and you get smarter and you get more expertise as you go. There are probably a couple things that you had on your list,
yeah,
Tom,
I wanted
to dive into specifically.
Let me kind of lead into what's cool about this industry is that, you know, although we are creating products that go out to people, what's actually being done in the game design process is experiences that are being created, right? And so there's a huge difference in the value of the actual product that is set down on your table and the value of the experience that people are having when they're playing the game. And that's one of the points that we really wanted to mm-hmm. hit on.
Agreed. So
I don't, you're trying to be nice.
Everyone's cold yeah. and tired. Forgive us. We are very tired. And that's not just
campaign.
Like us trying to be melodramatic. We're just apologizing for ourselves. That is something that I knew was present perspective in this industry more than others. But now that I'm on this side of it, I'm realizing just how pervasive it is. Mm-hmm. The idea that people value a board game on the physical product. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not paying $40 for X and Y amount of cardboard. Like, this is way overpriced and
blah, blah, blah. Pieces of cardboard.
Yeah. And it's, but you're not paying $40 for that. First of all, before we really.
Let's back it up.
I think I dramatically underestimated the production cost of a game before I was involved in spreadsheets about the production costs of a game. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't see a lot of really affluent board game publishers. You mm-hmm. know, like, people aren't running around rich because they made successful board games. Like, the margins are incredibly small. So I think people...
Mark's laughing.
Yeah. I'm triggered.
So first
triggered.
Of all...
like, you don't even want me to go
triggering
off.
Mark. Second of all... but that's not... I want to challenge this industry to get past valuing board games on the components. And not just, I'm not talking about the quality of components. I'm talking about, like, when you, you know, when you spend $15, $20, or $40, you're not buying a plastic disc. Mm-hmm. You're buying the experience of watching Star Wars. Mm-hmm. You know, you're buying...
If you're talking to millennials, let me explain. A plastic disc he's talking about is actually a DVD, if you've never heard of that before.
Okay, yeah. So when you pay to stream Star Wars, but
yeah, what or a video game.
What you're
right?
paying for is the experience you're going to have. You're paying for the hundreds of hours of design and development that went into it. You're paying for careers of experience that informed that design and that development. You know, the game could literally just be, I mean, what are you paying for when you buy something for a role-playing game? It's just a book with some, like,
what are you paying for when you download a video game?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ones and zeros?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, if you want more cardboard, you can get cardboard out behind the market
and now
in the dumpster.
Transitioned.
Yes, I'm going off.
We just yell
it's
at
time.
People.
It's time.
But I think if we had a paradigm shift on this as an industry, as a community, we would value our experience with our games more if we were valuing them differently. Mm-hmm. You know, if we think about how much fun we have and the experiences we have with what's in that box, and that's its value, and not this was overpriced for the widgets that come in it.
Divide your $99 investment by the number of times that you play something, the number of hours that you play it, and what, you know, you're going to be investing a dime a play. Like, really? Is that worth it? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a mathematician.
Not a great example, given how many board gamers buy games and never play them.
Really?
Yeah. Your point is super valid, though.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
I think... You know, every time I hear someone say, like, that isn't worth that, you know, it's...
He's doing math over there in the corner.
Well, yeah. When you go to...
My heart breaks a little.
When you go to a movie, you don't get anything. You're not taking anything home with you. There are no components to a movie. You get the experience mm-hmm. of all of the hard work and the writing and the filmmaking and the cinematography and the orchestral score True. And the talent. Preach. And that's what you're getting with a board game that is well-developed and well-made and brought into this world out of passion and not a love of money. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm getting a little less triggered.
Thanks for
okay.
listening to our podcast. We love you.
We do love you.
I used to be that way on video games. I used to think, like, wow, if you want $60 for this video game, mm-hmm. you're insane. And then I realized, like, I played a really good video game, like Red Dead Redemption. It's amazing. Play it. I'm sure most people who listen to this have played it. But, like, think of all the time, and, like, it's an open world, and, like, there's a lot of that goes into it. But also,
millions of hours on that.
Like, the enjoyment that I get to spend, you know, an hour and a half being an outlaw in the wild, wild west. Like, how cool is that? Well worth the money.
Well, and we all fall in these weird traps. Like, I still, if I'm going to buy something, you know, so like a video game. Like, if I'm buying a video game and I'm going to pony up $40-$60 for it, there's a part of me where downloading it, that feels ridiculous.
Right?
But if you hand it to me on a 2-cent disc, mm-hmm. you're like, okay, well, now I got what I paid for.
Because there's a material exchange.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. obviously that's absurd mm-hmm. because the actual physical cost of the thing that I'm putting $40 value on is nothing.
Mm-hmm. You have time to play video games?
No, this is just an example.
I've heard about that.
I mean, how many Steam games do you have that you've never played? you know, that's.
Listen, when you say steam, I'm thinking about my teapot.
That's right? Because. Like, I don't.
Yeah. I don't. The old steaming.
Oh,
travel
are we going to go to the Walker statement? Are we talking about age now, Lacey no, the Untamed?
We're not.
Okay.
I win the age game.
You do.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. 26.
Whoop, whoop.
So another thing that is kind of neat on this side of the veil of the industry is, okay, so we get tons and tons and tons of engagement with people, right? We're communicating on all these different platforms. And what some people don't realize is the impact of the positive comments that they share too. And that's something we wanted to talk about a little bit too.
Yeah, I absolutely want to encourage you. Like, if you ever feel motivated to just reach out and tell someone, like, I really enjoyed this experience. This game was fun. I think this picture is beautiful. Like, my family and I had a nice time playing this game. Like,
that means more to you guys.
Oh, you cannot pretty much anything. Possibly understand how meaningful that is to people. Please, anyone who's ever made anything, if you like the thing, tell them about it. It
goes so far.
It does. Random anecdote, but I'm a huge West Wing fan. There's a part in the West Wing where the president, Martin Sheen, loves this particular piece of music. And he says, I'm going to write this guy a letter. And that always really affected me, that it's like, okay, you know, the power of I'm going to write this person a letter and tell them how much I appreciated this thing. And he says it with this way, like, I've got to write this guy a letter. Like, I need to let him know that his creation meant something to me. Mm-hmm. And Twitter has given us all that power. Like, the other day, I enjoyed some hot sauce, and I tweeted these people and told them, your hot sauce is awesome. And it took me 4 seconds. Mm-hmm. But I know on this side of things, like, every single time someone sends even the fleetingest little message about enjoying Vindication, we, like, are through to the moon with joy about it.
We screenshot it and we share it with each other.
Particularly with, and this is just to further drive home the positive nature of this, is not to complain, but you have no concept until you're on this side of it how much negative feedback there is. We get dozens and dozens and dozens of very aggressive negative messages every single day on email and Facebook Messenger. And it's exhausting. Mm-hmm. And every time, you know, and it's just part of doing business.
My counselor's tired of hearing about it.
that's part of literally any business, right? So it's just whatever. It is what it is. Most of it is totally unfounded and just silly. Mm-hmm. But, and that's just humans being humans. Mm-hmm. But
it takes a toll.
When you're reading those and you're just, okay, I'm at work and I'm going through all these things. And it's, you know, when do I get to get off the computer and be done with this? And then this just explosion beacon of light comes through with someone saying something sweet and wonderful.
Hey, this is our third time putting something on the table and we all had such a great time. Something simple like that.
You cannot possibly oversell how meaningful that is to people who make things.
Endorphins, dopamine.
So definitely a lesson learned there. Taking the time to tell people you like what they've made. Oh, yes. Every time, do it. It's not a waste of your
time. And that transcends gaming, right? Like, that just isn't everything. Like, if you love something someone's done, go tell them about it. Share that. Turn the mood of whatever you're doing to the things that you love, and you will attract more of those things that you love. If you spend your time complaining about why something isn't perfect in every way, then you're going to go through your life thinking, oh, well, this isn't perfect, and this isn't perfect, and this isn't perfect. And that criticism is just going to just hurts you.
Just eats away.
Just in my life, I've seen that, you know, and you focus on the things that you love and you share those, you're just happier, right? You just set the environment.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing, just the offshoot of that, be patient with publishers and creators when you write them messages, because they are getting an unbelievable volume of correspondence. And, you know, if they don't get back to you right away, it's not that they don't care about your message. They really do. Mm-hmm. It's just that it literally could take 40 hours a week just responding to people's messages.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a little bit of grace there would go a long way.
Absolutely. True. Okay, well, that is about all that we wanted to go over today. And we've got to hurry our, you know, butts over to keep working on the campaign. So unless anybody else has anything to go over. Oh, wait. Speaking of hurrying our butts somewhere. Listen, there's something important we need to share with you just so that you can have a little bit of insight into, I don't know, some of the inner workings of what's going on with Tom's butt.
Oh, yeah.
Holy butts.
Or the outer workings.
Welcome to the Tomcast.
The outer workings is probably a better
Tom
okay. Okay.
Listen, you guys need to know how much we love Tom, and there's something happened to him, and I need him to share.
Well, yeah, okay. we keep saying we want this podcast to really legitimately be like a behind the scenes look at how these things are going.
Here's a
Botox the scene look. Well, so anecdote. So the campaign launched on a Tuesday.
Yes.
The Saturday before, Mark and I were in full time, like 17-hour-a-day crunch mode. Mm-hmm. And this is something we can talk about a little bit more later. I do have some blog articles I'm planning on writing kind of about that. But this campaign, we had to put it together in a truncated timeline. So we're very
truncated.
Reaching, but I like.
Okay. I'm reaching for each one I can.
So we were, exhausted and stretched thin and so we were going. And then on this Saturday, my wife encouraged me to go for a run. Get out, get your blood moving,
Kinesthetic release.
And I was also trying to really get some time with my son, who is, 4 and just wants, like I want, for us just constantly be together and just do nothing but Google each other.
Mm-hmm.
So he was going to come run with me. And so we were running and he was tuckering out. And so we went to the playground at the school by our house.
Mm-hmm.
And we were running around the play structure and he was running one way and I was running the other way. And every time we'd pass each other, we would crack up and laugh and run around again and pass each other and crack up and laugh. And one time we were doing that and he was right next to me and I was fully engaged with him and we're just cracking up and laughing. And then all of a sudden, like searing, knee buckling, horrific pain in my butt.
In your butt.
And then this like guttural monster sound from behind me. And, so I'm like all hunched over and I turn around really quickly. And then for some reason, like I had this weird dissociative moment where I was shocked to find that there's this huge German Shepherd, like 6 inches from my face.
Mm-hmm.
Like I wheeled around to see what just happened to my butt and then was surprised that there was a source to the pain. And this enormous dog had for some reason just charged. I had no idea there was a dog there
mm-hmm.
until it took a giant chunk out of my backside.
Mm-hmm.
And oh yeah. And so then the dog is like just doing this like, I roared in its face,
uh-huh.
and it jumped back.
Did you really? You roared at it?
I made a lion at it. I did a roar.
Good.
Yeah,
wow,
it was mostly just, I think, pain. Yeah. And then, so then it jumped back, and then it was doing this, like, standoffish growl thing with me, and Calvin was kind of over there doing this nervous sound.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just got him the heck out of there,
mm-hmm.
and we left. And then it's...
We start getting messages, Tom, at the urgent care working on the campaign.
Yeah, so then we're walking home, and he's asking me all these questions about it, and he asked me if I'm bleeding, and I said no, and then he said, why am I? And then I stick my hand back there, and it's like, oh, yeah, yes, mm-hmm. I am definitely bleeding, and which is, it's one of those things where it's like, I don't have time for this right now. I do not have time to be bleeding in the, out, and And it's like, okay, I should just ignore it. And no, it's like, I don't know anything about this dog. Mm-hmm. It's like, take care of yourself. But every time you involve the hospital, goodbye 24 hours, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, a large portion of what people read on this campaign was written from a hospital waiting room with my, like,
with your butt in a sling.
Massacred, bloody mess of a butt all propped up on some pillows. Yeah.
So as you're reading through the journeys, as the campaign has gone, think about Tom's butt.
How much pain he was feeling.
That is the moral of the story as you're reading through that. What do you think about that?
Listen, we welcome your comments about this. Please put as many things in you want there.
No ifs, ands, or buts.
Exactly.
All right, we're going to get going so we can keep going and doing a good job on the campaign. So if you are wanting to get in touch with us at all, orangenebula.com is your hub. You can follow us on Facebook or Twitter on Instagram. Our handle is @orangenebula. And until next time, I guess just adios, yeah?
You're phenomenal.
You are. You are. I hope we didn't vent too much this episode. It was meant to be constructive.
I'm triggered!
Mark gets triggered, but his heart is good.
Yes, you just have to look for it.
Yeah, just don't listen to him.
All right, everybody. Have a great day, evening, wherever we are. We hope you're happy, and we hope you know how important you are to our community.
Mwah.
Oh, bye.
So I was getting my hair cut, what little hair I have left, and the guy that was cutting the hair across from me actually heard about Orange Nebula.
Really?
Yeah. He was following the Instagram page, and he's like, oh, I missed out on the last Kickstarter, and I was like, pew, pew, he's back in right now.
Pew, pew.
So I brought in the game, and I showed it to him. It was pretty cool.
Did you have laser eyes?
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I love the laser eyes.
I'm glad that the game's just in your car.
It is. I feel like a traveling salesperson. I'm going to start going door to door, preaching the good word. Have you heard about the book of Vindication?